Hello and welcome to Talking Europe. My guest is a French diplomat with huge experience, particularly on the European stage. Pierre Vimont was the first Executive Secretary General of the EU's External Action Service from 2010 to 2015. And before that, he had been France's ambassador and permanent representative to the European Union. He was chief of staff to several French foreign ministers, including Dominique de Villepin and Michel Barnier, who is now the Prime Minister of France. Pierre Vimont served as the French ambassador to the United States during the administrations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama. He is now a senior fellow at the European Center of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
One of the areas you work on is the European neighborhood policy. What's your view of what's happening in Georgia and Moldova at the moment? We've seen this election, which the EU has questioned in Georgia, and a razor-thin pro-European majority in the Moldovan referendum. Is there a parallel, and is the EU losing influence in those two countries, do you think?
I don't know if it's losing influence, but I think the parallel between these two countries, as you were rightly saying, is that they're both neighbours to Europe, and also on the other side, very close to Russia. And I think this is a case of confronting influences from both sides, which makes these two countries living in a difficult place. And therefore, for Europeans to find the right policy that they want to follow in order to keep their influence there and be able to confront Russian pressure. As you know, both countries are candidates for accession to the EU, and therefore this is a very delicate challenge that Europe has to face.
So Europe can't be seen to be too involved in an internal matter?
Well, to some extent it is involved in internal matters, and it has to understand the hard place where it is trying to play its own influence and its own action. I think the real issue for Europe is to understand in a better way the challenges it is facing in these kind of countries, and to anticipate the difficulties that may arise, the challenges that it has to face. It needs to be more playing in the long game than just trying to manage the short-term crisis it is facing.
You obviously remember Viktor Orban, the Hungarian Prime Minister's solo diplomatic mission earlier this summer. We saw him in Tbilisi standing shoulder to shoulder with Georgian Dream and Prime Minister Kobakhidze. Do you think the EU should have clarified on this occasion as well who actually speaks for the bloc of 27?
You had some very clear statements, among others, from the High Representative, Vice President Josep Borrell, reminding our partners outside of Europe that Viktor Orban cannot speak on behalf of the Europeans, the European Union, if it has no mandate, and it had no mandate. But I think at the same time, Viktor Orban doesn't care all too much about those statements. He wants to put his own narrative right there on the table, and nobody will prevent him from doing that, I guess.
Let's talk a bit about Ukraine, because you've said that Europeans don't have a clear idea of what their ultimate goal in Ukraine actually is. Just elaborate a bit on that, and are they stuck because they have to say it's up to Ukraine, we'll just do whatever Ukraine wants?
No, I think what I want to say is that in the short term, Europeans have reacted in a rather efficient way after the Russian military intervention. We were able to come up with the kind of military assistance that was required, humanitarian, financial assistance also. And we have been doing that since then. Maybe not exactly to the kind of level that the Ukrainians would like, but still we're trying to do our best. My point is another point, another issue, is that we need to look further down the road. How do we get out of the current conflict? We've been stating time and again that it is for the Ukrainians to decide, and this is true. But we may have a conversation with the Ukrainian leadership, try to put forward what are our own interests in this very difficult confrontation we're facing at the moment with Russia. Try to come up with what we could name a Russian strategy on behalf of the 27 EU member states.
So
and we're
does
not
having,
doing that at the moment.
Does having a strategic discussion, does that mean breaking a taboo and saying that de facto Russia will hold on to some territories even though the Europeans won't legally recognize that?
No, I'm not going that far, but I'm saying something is missing in the EU foreign policy for many years, which is Russian strategy. For the last 15 or 20 years, we've been trying to come up with this, but we're pretty much divided among the 27 of us. And because we know this is a divisive topic, we prefer not to talk about it and just brush it under the carpet. I think we can go on, we cannot go on like that. We're trying to just sideline debates and conversation that are very difficult for us. At some point, we have to be clear-minded and clear-sighted about where we want to go, and therefore have some of those difficult discussions among us.
You're a specialist on transatlantic relations, and I wonder what you think about Europe's preparedness for a Donald Trump presidency, potentially. We keep hearing this word, Europe is prepared or it's not prepared. What does that even mean?
I maybe would like to remind you when Trump was first elected and started in 2017 with this his way of doing foreign policy, which was very difficult, I would put it that way, for Europeans. The then German Chancellor, Mrs. Merkel, came out very quickly after the first G7 summit with Donald Trump. She came back home and said, we Europeans have to take our destiny into our own hands. That was 2017. 7 years later, where are we? We're still struggling with that. President Macron talking about the need for strategic autonomy. Many others saying we need to have a European defense or even a European defense union. We're still very far away from this. So,
because we're just too divided in Europe? Or
we're
why?
Divided because, let's be honest, it's a huge challenge. If America, whether it be Trump elected or Kamala Harris elected, America is asking Europeans to take a larger share of the burden in the field of defense and security. It started with Barack Obama already in 2008. Remember his defense secretary, Bob Gates, at the time, saying to the Europeans, you need to, up your act in the defense sector. And we're still very far away from this. So the real issue is that whoever wins the election in 1 week soon, we need to be to start discussing here again among ourselves, where do we want to go? How can Europe have its own defense? And more generally, I would say, be a stronger geopolitical actor. We've been repeating time and again that Europe wants to be more geopolitical.
Perhaps it has just done something which is a bit more geopolitical, and that is the application of tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles. That decision has now happened. I suppose Europe is sending a signal not only to China, but perhaps indirectly to Donald Trump with that decision.
Yes, you're right, because this is the kind of language that Donald Trump understands. But you have to broaden the scope of your strategic thinking. In other words, it's not only about tariff. It's about how do we behave in the Indo-Pacific region, what kind of diplomatic conversation we want to have with China on the Middle East, for instance, in Africa, about what is happening at the moment with the BRICS, about the kind of new world order we want to set up.
Just one final point. You've said that Europe has disappeared from the Middle East over the last 10 years. So diplomatically, it's lost a lot of its former influence. Why is that?
I think it's because 10 years ago we faced the Arab Spring Revolution in Libya, in Syria, in North African countries, in Egypt and elsewhere. And we were faced with a totally new situation compared to the kind of Mediterranean policy we had unfolded before. And as we haven't really managed to deal with this Arab Spring and its fallouts, slowly we became silent and slowly disappeared from the screen. Mm. And I think we have to regain a stronger position in that region, because after all, it's part of the neighborhood of the European Union. And that's why we need to be more active, more present, more agile, taking more initiative. Easy to say, I must say, and much more difficult to put into action. But at least we have to try.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being my guest, Pierre Vimont, Senior Fellow of Carnegie Europe. And later in Talking Europe, we'll take a closer look at the EU Commission hearings that are getting underway at the European Parliament. It's crunch time for Ursula von der Leyen's Commission 2.0. Do stay with us.